Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, and this is episode number 301. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for sponsoring this episode. Truly appreciate them. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And Train Heroic's a product I've been using for 5 years. I think it's the best one on the market. It gives you lots of flexibility in of being able to do your own programming, but it also allows you to, enter the marketplace, and there's an entrepreneurial piece of that as well, which I really enjoy. So this week, joined by Matt Tooney. He's a strength coach from Newcastle Knights. I got a chance to know him a couple years ago, I think at the original play lab down there in Australia, but just a guy that I've come to really enjoy having conversations with and doing some fantastic things down in Australia. So appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thanks, man. Good to be here. Took us a little while to tee it up, but good to finally get the opportunity to chat. Looking forward to it.
I think we tried to set this up originally that year, but it's taken to get it done. So,
well, Matthew, I think it's been when you originally came out after the ASCA conference.
That's probably right. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what it was. You're right. Well, man, you've watched these episodes before, and I don't want to dive into your laundry list of accomplishments and places and things, but in your experience, which either place or time in your career had the most impact on you and why?
Oh, definitely early on. So the club I've been at now was where I originally started, but I had a little bit of a trek away for a couple of years elsewhere. So the Newcastle Knights is in rugby league team in Australia in the National Rugby League competition. I started here originally as an intern 9-10 years ago, and that would have been probably one of the most impactful experiences, really, because I had a really positive one. And I think about a lot of the students that are entering our industry at a young age and probably don't have the ability to critically analyze the environment they're stepping into. So there might be a lot of luck a lot of the time in the internships that, unless you're strategically applying for a lot of places, sure. I was just lucky at the university that I was attending to do my undergraduate degree at the time, was linked with the professional rugby league team locally. And I actually did a bit of a dodgy on my university lecturer. So I was supposed to be for strictly people who had worked. It was a university placement that we had to undertake. And we were supposed to do it for, if you'd done it in a gym, just a regular public gym before, they had these opportunities with pro clubs for people that had already worked in a gym. And I hadn't done that, so I had to go and tick my hours off elsewhere. But my uni lecturer said that I wasn't able to do that through the university, but it was something that I really wanted to pursue. So I contacted the head of performance at the club at the time separately, just via email. And I went in for an interview and got the internship, and about a month or so into the internships when my uni lecturer actually found out that that had happened. So about 12 months later, I think there was 8 or so interns that year, and I was probably just the last one standing who'd hung around the longest and asked the most silly questions. And looking back on that experience, I'm extremely lucky that I got put into a really good learning environment for 12 months with a couple of the really good mentors, Lee Clark, Tim Rogers, who I still speak with regularly. That led to a part-time opportunity at that club the following year. We had a bit of a change-up. Unfortunately, those guys that were there had to leave just due to coaching changes and the like that happened within the industry pretty regularly. But an opportunity came up just in a part-time environment with our academy. So the experience I had there and probably the luck, that could have, if another couple of people were running that program at a time, I may have head down a completely different path. It might not have been an experience that I really enjoyed. So it could have set me up completely differently. So that first year's experience is probably very, very impactful for me. The next major thing was off the back of Lee as well, who recommended me for a job a few years later. I went to a club in a semi-professional environment. So in Australia, we have the top NRL, and then there's a reserve grade that sits underneath that called the New South Wales Cup within our state. Probably like equivalent of a minor leagues baseball team or D-league basketball, that nature in America. And I got an opportunity to run my own program where at the time I thought I was really ready, and looking back now, I probably wasn't, but
sure,
that's probably like most people would have a story like that.
Oh yeah.
And at the time, in the early 20s, I was 22 when I took that opportunity. And I think you've probably got a similar story from when you went to NFL Europe and college and different things like that. This probably wasn't on that scale, but dealing with a couple of years into my career, there was obviously players that were 10 years older than me that had been professional for a long period of time that were in that environment. There were an older coach that had been doing it and been quite successful for a long period of time. So the experiences I took out of that and just being able to deal with those situations mightn't have been necessarily from the programming benefit, but a lot more from the engagement and relationship benefit and trying to get my point across and argue my opinion and how I wanted to mold the program and just the opportunity to head up and lead my own program and my own team while not being fireman at a professional level was obviously very impactful for me moving forward.
Yeah, so, I mean, so much to dig into there. I mean, one, I think one lesson in that is taking risk. You know, I mean, you went outside the norm, you took a risk to contact, you know, the club on your own. And that's so important for coaches, you know, is to not just play. You want to play a respectful game. You don't ever want to kind of go outside of the boundaries, but you know, you have to separate yourself as well, you know, and, you know, and taking risk is one of those ways to do that for sure. The other thing is,
yeah, and it wasn't something I was taking someone else's opportunity either. Like I wasn't, they took all of the people on. So it wasn't like I sort of jumped in on someone who was supposed to be there or deserved to be there more than me. So I didn't feel guilty about it, but yeah, I just knew that it was what I needed to do and I needed to take whatever means to try and get an opportunity, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you never want to push people down to lift yourself up, but at the same time, it's, you know, they have every bit as much opportunity to kind of interview and get the job as well. And, you can't think that. And then the other part of it, I always say it on this show, is that you don't really truly learn what it means to be a strength coach until you're a head strength coach, until you lead culture, until you lead discipline, until you lead buy-in and all those types of things. It's, you know, it's just being a technician. It's just being, you know, just regurgitating workouts at that point. But sitting in the big chair, all of a sudden you have to deal with coaches and you have to deal with athletes. And that's the hard part. That's the part that we're not prepared for going in. And,
it's definitely
not so much.
The final being the final point of accountability too. There's always someone further up the chain that takes the heat, then I think the last port of call, everything's on you to a degree. I think you learn a lot about yourself and how to run a program.
Right. Well, in those lines, I mean, one of the questions I always ask is, you know, what's the biggest mistake you've made as a coach and how you've learned from it?
Definitely. And these three separate points that are probably all related to the one mistake. I know you speak a lot about making the big time where you're at. And that was definitely something that I was probably guilty of not doing early on. And it wasn't that I didn't dedicate myself to the job that I was currently at. I always did that, but I probably always had an eye on what making that next step and making that progression. And that's probably a natural thing to a degree. But I also found that at times it caused a little bit of frustration and I was trying to progress my career maybe too quickly before I was ready. And the other thing I found in hindsight, the times when opportunities presented themselves was actually at the times when I was least looking for them. Apart from that internship that I originally interviewed with, all the few roles that I've had so far throughout my 10 years of my career, I haven't applied for or interviewed for. They've been sort of just presented to me by people approaching me, asking whether I'd be interested. And at the time of those things occurring, it's probably a coincidence that at the same time that's happened, there's been multiple things that all occurred at the one time. And they've probably all happened around changes and shifts in my mindset around how I approach things, where I wasn't actively pursuing things or applying for things all the time. It was just sort of things that fell in my lap in a way, just off the back of generally getting to know people and networking and doing good work, what I felt like was good work. The second point of that was, there's probably been times in my career when I thought I was ready for that next step, only to find out probably a couple of years later that I'm glad I didn't get it at the time, because I probably wasn't ready. And that probably ebbs and flows throughout your career. I'm at a point now where I feel relatively comfortable with the role that I'm in, but in 5 years' time, I may look back at that and say that I could have done heaps. I should look back at that and say I could have done a heaps better job, and I probably wasn't ready at the time. So I think the third point that ties into that is just being guilty of trying to put yourself across, being too forward to, I know in the past, in the roles that I've been, when I was an assistant in my previous role at the club I was at, I probably put myself too forward in trying to make people aware of my skill sets or make me feel like I was valued, if that makes sense.
So, right.
You sort of try and put yourself out there a little bit too much, and you can be a little bit too forceful. It's something that I've definitely been guilty with, just to try and make people aware of your knowledge and skill set to see that you're a valued member of the team. But how that goes down might be a little bit misconstrued, or I hope that makes sense, Ron, in terms of how I'm getting that across. But I think all those three points probably are linked to the one thing, and just trying to feel like I had to speed the process up too much rather than just being happy with how it was progressing and realizing I was in a good place and I had some good jobs. And it's probably when I got a lot more comfortable with that. It's when things actually probably progressed for me a lot quicker.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this on the show quite a bit about making the big time where you're at. It's really, it stems from ultimately what your definition of success is, you know. And if your definition of success is championships and prestige and a logo and all those types of things, then that grass is greener, always looking for the next opportunity kind of becomes the chase, you know. And that's what you get intoxicated by. But if your success is making an impact and, you know, and having true relationships and being a good husband and being a good father or mother or wife or whatever, that, you know, you can do that anywhere, you know. And once you realize that, then ultimately you can be present where your feet are. And, you know, the other thing you said in there was, you know, you're not ever fully ready for any opportunity, whatever that next step is. I mean, that's the overload principle, right? I mean, you got to stress the body past its present capacity. And you know, ultimately you never quite feel ready for whatever that is. But you know, those are also the times when you're going to rise to the challenge, you know, and grow. And I think that's so important. But, you know, you mentioned early in there, you know, you've gone from, you started as an intern in the club that you're in, and now you're the strength coach. You've had, you know, you've gone through all the steps, you know, the part-time assistant and the semi-pro, the head coach, and I'm sure you were an assistant in there at some point, but talk a little bit about that.
Now at the moment where I'm back at, so when I went away for a couple of years at the part-time club, I came back and I ran our academy program, our Elite Pathways program, which is under 20s,
right,
all the way to under 14. So across sort of 9 teams and a lot of part-time staff, over 200 players. So I headed up that sort of our academy program. And then I've recently moved into an assistant role with our top NRL team. So
yeah,
within the same club, yeah.
So, I mean, you're going through the process and you're going through the journeyman's kind of, you know, schedule of you know, yeah, steps. You know, what advice do you have for the young coach that's just starting off as the intern? You know, do you feel like all those steps are necessary? Do you feel like, you know, you've been cheated in any way, or do you try to bypass some of those? What are your thoughts on that?
I definitely don't feel cheated in any way, and it's hard to say whether I probably only know the path that I've taken as well. So it's very difficult to know where I'd be at in the current role if I hadn't done what I'd previously done. I don't know whether I'd be better or worse, not as prepared, I suppose, because I don't know what that process would have entailed, I suppose. Right. I think I was really lucky to a lot of the time I spent with junior athletes. So when I did my internship, while I was exposed to the senior team, I did a lot of work with our junior team, which gave me a lot of coaching experience early on. So, like most internships with senior professional teams, they're not going to allow you to coach their top dog players in your first year of an internship, but they were more than happy for us to really deep dive into some coaching really early on when I was in with the under 16s and under 18s. And if you make mistakes with those small mistakes running a warm up in those age groups, it's not the end of the world. So I really cherished that opportunity that we got given. I think then my opportunity to run my own program was a really good experience. It sort of diversified my skill set massively, which was the next step. And then when I came back to the club that I'm currently at, then I had an opportunity to manage a lot of staff. So I was across sort of 15 to 20 part-time assistant coaches, interns across 9 different teams, multiple different head coaches for different age groups who all had their own different philosophies. We had a few different venues, so I had to learn to juggle logistics and a lot more management skills probably in that role.
Right.
So I think 3 different roles that I've got have all probably set me up and widened, broadened my skill set to hopefully allow me to progress further. Rather than if I'd probably just taken a very linear path or a quick progression into the role that I'm in now. So it's hard to say whether I feel cheated for, I definitely don't feel cheated, sorry, for having to do what I've done. Whether I'd be in the same position I've had any earlier or later if I'd had a different opportunity. I still don't feel like it took me a long time, or I don't feel old. I'm still relatively lucky to probably be in the position I'm at now for my age. So I feel like I've got a really good experience and exposed to different environments. I think the other big thing is, in terms of advice to interns on that front, would be being willing to learn from multiple different people. I think a lot of the time people see the negatives in what people aren't doing, or they read or see something online, or they might be exposed to a different coach and the principles and the philosophies that they used, and then they get thrown into a different environment where things are different. And I'm definitely been guilty in the past of judging those people for why aren't they doing this or why aren't they doing that. And I quickly realized that there was still a lot of positives that I could take out of that environment. It's just about picking and choosing what the pros and cons are, or what you saw of what they do differently, and not being sort of boxing yourself into one mindset or one skill set or what you think is the one only way of doing things. And I've had interns in the past who have asked us questions around certain things that they might have read or seen at uni, and being allowing them to have a learning opportunity of saying, well, that's well and good, and I completely agree with you, but that just doesn't fit with the logistics of our environment, or we can achieve those same goals in A, B, C, different ways. So just having a very broad mindset to learning the positive, not necessarily always perceiving the negatives in the environment you might get caught up in.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, I think, you know, of going through the steps. I think, you know, I've been fortunate where I was able to bypass a lot of steps, but you get thrown into the deep end, you know, all of a sudden you become a head strength coach at 22 years old or 23 years old. And you're having to, you know, you're having to have big picture thinking when you're only prepared for small picture thinking. And you know, having learned all the steps and seeing how to handle a disgruntled player, how to handle a disgruntled coach, how to handle all these things that affect the training, and seeing somebody model that, good or bad, you know, you're learning good or bad, is oftentimes the best thing in your preparation. Now the key is to try to do that in a way that you're able to live and not work below poverty level, but I think there's that, to me, is the question, is how do we improve individually and collectively the finances of that process, in my opinion. But Australia does a much better job of that with their system than we do in the States. But you mentioned in there, you know, working in the academy setting and having 200 athletes, and you know, as strength coaches, we all want to get up in front of people and give these presentations and talk about triphasic training and, you know, all these different types of loading protocols and systems and whatnot. But when you get 200 athletes coming at you, in short amount of times. I mean, logistics drive the training, and you know, and training age, and all those types of, you know, environment, they all drive the training. When you're in that setting, what, I mean, the strength coach that's listening to this, that's got, you know, 50 athletes, 100 athletes in the room that they're working with at a time, what's your advice in that situation?
I think, across our 200 athletes, they're obviously split across multiple teams. So sure, we'd be able to coordinate their schedule a little bit. So we had multiple teams, different teams in the gym at the time or on the field at the time. But that still might mean we might have 30 to 40, probably. We might have 30
to 40. You're still managing the whole collectively too.
Sorry, what was that?
And you're still managing the whole collectively.
Yeah, definitely. And you're still trying to juggle the time frames around who's in the gym at one time and who's on the field, and juggling their weekly schedule on what days and what facility across multiple different venues. So that's all definitely the case. When it comes to, there's definitely environments where we, and times where we might have 40 to 50, 13, 14, 15, 16 year olds sort of all in the gym at the one time. And we don't have the luxury of a big college weight room with 18 squat racks and platforms. And I think we've got our junior facility where our academy train out of have three platforms, three squat racks, three chin-up bars, some basic a dumbbell rack, three benches. So you need to be very simplistic with your approach, and you need to have a structure and good flow around how you coordinate your timings and where you what you perceive to be your big rocks and how you're going to fit those in. You also need to structure your assistant staff and your interns really well, and how they flow around the room, and maybe allocating certain sections or certain exercises to them so players can sort of move around in a little bit of a production line fashion. Right. And the other thing you need to do from the start is you just need to lay a very clear platform with good demonstration and good instruction just from the outset that gives clear instruction around how you want the session to flow and what your expectations are, and really lay that grounding from the beginning. And it's probably going to take longer in the early ages, and then as you get to the 18s and the under 20s and those early guys that have been in the system for quite a while, that talk at the start might only be a few minutes and they understand how things work, and then, right, let's get to work. But I think always having that little bit of an introduction around how things are going to flow, what the standards and expectations are, and then even grouping players accordingly with where they're at from a skill set perspective. And then just probably addressing the biggest emphasis of the group. I think I've tried at times to probably deep dive and individualize things a little bit too much in those big group environments, realizing that in those younger ages, they all really need the same things anyway. And there's going to be a couple of outliers from an injury history perspective or current rehab settings and different things like that. There's always going to be a couple of different outliers, but the majority of the group, the big key things are going to always stay the same.
Yep.
So I think if you don't get caught up on trying to do those last few percent and really just nail those big rocks early and get that big 90% right first, the rest of the stuff seems to fall into place pretty quickly. The other thing is just using your time smart around there might be areas of the program that you perceive that you would typically want to do during that weight room time, but there might be things that, well, you might be able to transition that onto the field and do that as part of your warm-up, or do that post-session, bring everyone together and do that post-session on the field. That might be an easier logistical management rather than having everyone in the environment in a closed space where you might have heaps more room. So just thinking outside the box around what your limitations are around time, equipment, the level of the athlete, what those logistical barriers are, and then ways you might be able to break those down and tick the boxes that you want to tick, but maybe in a less conventional way than you would typically like to do that.
Yeah, totally agree. I think it's so important that, you know, one of the things you said in there that I think warrants repeating is the more work you do on the front end, the easier it is on the back end, you know,
and
laying out a clear, you know, giving a good brief on the front end and letting you clear instructions and asking questions and taking a little extra time over time, especially when you're dealing with, like you said, 13, 14, 15 year olds, that's gonna make them so much better when they're 18, 19, and 20. And I couldn't agree with you more. I know, you know, being in Australia, you've had to, it seems like in the last probably 10 years, it's really taken off in terms of more of a global type of education, but you were doing, you know, you're looking internationally for education, whether it was Exos mentorship or I think you just got back from Oregon not too long ago, and you know, right. And, you know, going and really seeking outside of your own country. And that's something that I talk a lot about, you know, again on the show, where, you know, we're not the only country in the world that has strength and conditioning. There's a lot of really good strength and conditioning coaches all over the world. A lot of people are doing it way better, you know, and some doing it worse, you know, but where did that spirit come from, that necessity come from, and what would you encourage, how would you encourage others to go about seeking coaches outside of their network, per se?
I think the desire to learn and want to expose myself to different environments is probably an early thing. So going back 6 or so years, 2013 it was, middle of 2013, couple of years into my career, a close mate of mine, Cameron Dyer, decided we wanted to do, and he's a physio out here from Australia who's doing a really good job, and we'd done our internship at the time at Newcastle and decided we wanted to expose ourselves to a few different environments, and we planned a 6-week trip around America, which was just fully funded by herself. And we just began by randomly emailing everyone that we sort of knew of, or the planned route we planned on taking, and tried to tee up just as many opportunities as what we can. And the people that pretty much got back to us, we sort of planned our 6-week trip around America, and it took us pretty much on a full lap of the States. And through various education opportunities, we had some contacts. So I'd done the mentorships with Exos when they came out, and that developed into a relationship of me consulting on their education arm when they teach out here, which is something that's progressed from that. And so those just further develop your contacts and networks, and then you get to know people in different areas. And it was just a willingness pretty much for us to just be happily knocked back and turned down, and we sent back heaps of emails that never got replied to. At the time, we were early 20s. We didn't have a profile. We weren't in big name jobs or anything like that. There wasn't too much incentive necessarily for them to have us visit them.
Sure.
So it was pretty much just off the kindness of their back that they were happy to have people in. And we visited multiple colleges and multiple private facilities, and went from LA, Seattle, across to Boston, down New York, through Florida. Like it was a very decent trip for 6 weeks, and definitely opened our eyes to lots of different environments. And there's also things where it can be a bit of that grass is always greener mentality as well around what we were walking into. And there was at times we walked out and we're like, oh, it sort of reassures you that you're doing an okay job because you can see what they're doing. And then there's also some times when we spent a few days at Cressy's, and that was a very eye-opening experience to how sometimes the what's portrayed in social media in different areas, and then you see it in real life, isn't necessarily what's going down. That's not the case at all at Eric's. I think the thing that the image that he portrays of his facilities and what's happening inside his facilities, and when we went there and saw it in operation, you couldn't have gave it a more glowing recommendation. So, and he was amazingly open with his time. And so I think you just need to put yourself out there and understand that you're probably going to get knocked back. It's probably easier now with probably a Twitter and Instagram and all those social media probably being a little bit more advanced than it was back then.
Right.
And I think going to places that a lot of people go to, the profiles of the people that they know, that there's frequent people that frequently speak on podcasts and have a big profile, and they're probably the easy people to gravitate towards.
But right.
No, obviously a lot of other people that would be willing to have you visit that you might never have heard of, that you just need to probably put yourself out there. And the same as I spent a couple of weeks in that same year in the south of France at a rugby league club through a link that I had back here in Australia, who was a guy who's become a close mentor of mine, Adam Tripaz, and he was working in Newcastle and went over to France working over there. So I went and spent a couple of weeks with him, and working, seeing him work in a different culture and with different language. And I know there's a lot of coaches in China at the moment getting exposed to those different sort of cultural environments. So as much as you put yourself out there to see the challenges that other environments are dealing with and things they might be doing well, and that's only going to benefit you. And when you go back to your own environment, to how you can deal with your own challenges or things you might be able to implement within your own program.
Right. Yeah, I think it's so smart. I had kind of forced, learning when I, went to NFL Europe at 22 years old and saw, was out of the country, living out of the country for the first time and all those types of things. But I mean, it definitely, it exposes you not just to new types of training and that type of stuff, but it makes you think that the world is much smaller than it is. And you're building new contacts and you're looking at different ways of culture and different ways of doing things. And it makes it encourages you when you see, like you said, that, things aren't as glamorous as they might appear from afar. Yep. And also, you also recognize that there's a lot of people doing a lot of really great things with very limited resources, I think I tell people all the time now that, I don't know if I would do a traditional internship anymore where I went and just worked for one club for 6 months or 12 months or whatever it was. I would do a bunch of mini internships where I would spend 2 weeks or a week at different clubs, in different parts of the world. And be surprised how much more of a network you can build that way, how much more learning happens, and
no doubt.
Probably a better use of your money as well. But, well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Best piece of coaching advice. I don't know whether this one's been tossed up before, a little bit random one, but in my first year, and it's probably the simplicity around it and more the communication communication style and dealing with other athletes. But the first guys that I worked with in my internship, Lee Clark and Tim Rogers, they used to have this saying with, and they'd point to the front of the back of their body or the posterior chain, back and hammies, and say, "This gets you paid." And then he'd point to the front and say, "This gets you laid." and the context around that was very, very much quite simple, but it was just around communicating to players. It spoke to them on their level around the importance of the things like glute strength and hamstring and posterior chain strength and all that sort of things, when there's obviously some of the time a big focus, especially in young players, in terms of what they see in the mirror sometimes. But that obviously fed an area for them that was obviously important in terms of how they were portrayed and how they were seen and their profile and their image as well. So it wasn't necessarily the most scientific coaching experience, but it really allowed me to understand the simplicity of trying to get your point across in terms that means something and the players understand by diving into what they value. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
I've mentioned him already a couple of times, but Cressy's would be a regular website that I still visit. I think his content, both his longer blog options and his small snippet videos, just you go away every time you visit that just with some little takeaways that you can implement straight away. I think his ability to make you feel like, why haven't I ever thought of that for something that's so simple, but just you just walk away just going, that just completely makes sense. And while he deals with a lot of overhead athletes, obviously in a contact-based sport, the shoulder and the anatomy of the shoulder and how that moves is obviously a key point for us with the heavy contact we deal with in our sport. So while being different overhead athletes, I still get a lot of value out of that. Apps, I've recently, which I haven't had a whole lot of time to deep dive into it yet, but I've recently downloaded the MyJump MySprint apps, which is JB Morin. I don't know whether you've heard of him. I've met him, but I've just seen some of his stuff. And obviously the prevalence in force plates like Force Decks and the more ability to collect more data and all that sort of stuff with more high-end technologies becoming easier and easier, but there's also some great apps and they've been validated, and I'm look forward to deep diving into those a little bit more, just in everyday coaching environments where you don't necessarily need to set up as much and you got your phone and you got the apps there. So that could play a key point just in being able to regularly collect a little bit more data, especially across a larger number or a larger cohort population. And then probably the two biggest apps I spend a lot of time on, one I definitely know you spoke about a lot because I heard about it from you, is Trello, and I use that a lot in my everyday, both with my wife and around and stuff around the house, but also with work.
Right.
That's something I use a lot, and I get I'm probably not the biggest reader of sitting down book wise, but I've got a decent Audible collection, so I use my Audible a lot, and I'm in the car driving a lot, so I love to listen to audiobooks. So that's definitely my Audible app gets a fair workout.
Yeah.
And then book front, probably the last few books I've listened to or the ones I've liked the most this year on Audible, Black Box Thinking was one that I really took a good deep dive into, and that's just about sort of being able to learn from your mistakes and accept your mistakes and put your hand up for those, and then how that can guide your thinking and how that can change things moving forward for you. Checklist Manifesto was another one I really enjoyed that I recently listened to. That's probably sort of speaks for itself in regards to the title, but that's something I definitely recommend. And then Stick Fire was another book that I'd probably listened to over 12 months ago or so.
What was that one?
Stealing Fire.
Stealing Fire, yeah.
Yeah, that was, let me just pull, trying to pull that author up, but he was originally the author of, what was his original book? Superman in the title, it'll come to me, but it's all about sort of action sports and flow states and different mindsets around how some of those extreme sport guys do the things that they're doing. And I'll have to Google that original title of his book as well, because that's a good one too. But
I was just given a book that had Superman in the title. I'm trying to see it, but I'm too old to see that far.
If I could get out of my app, I'd get Audible and get it up. But The Rise of Superman.
Yeah, that's
it. And then he wrote another book called Stealing Fire. So I'd highly recommend those two as well. So
that's good. Well, man, like you said at the beginning, I know it's taken us 3 years to try to get this knocked out, but really appreciate you. I really enjoy seeing the work that you do from afar and watching your career and the stuff that you've been able to accomplish, and exciting to watch, inspiring, and really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
Thanks for having me on, mate. In return, thanks for everything you do for our industry and with both play and obviously your individual projects around the podcast. And I've, as I said before, when we're off air, I look forward. I've got your new book, which just released a couple of days ago, sitting in my Kindle ready to go. So I look forward to deep diving into that.
Appreciate it.
You do forever, all of us.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.